Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hello, everybody. Happy Party Friday. Chuck Bonnywell and Julie Hayden with you on this Party Friday. Don't worry, Chuck is on his way. He had some legal stuff to take care of. I talked to him about 10 minutes ago, and he should be here at any time now. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine. You can find out all about them. We use them. Jack Schaefer there is great at mountainwestwellness.com. Happytrees.co, that's a great full-service tree company. We also use them. And then also Denver Cenogenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. We are going to, at about 3:20, we're going to have the great debate. If you were listening Wednesday, sort of a debate broke out between Chuck and a bunch of the listeners and people in the Zoom chat room. Should you wait until election day and vote in person, or should you go ahead and mail your ballot in? Which is more helpful? Which is more hurtful? I told Chuck, if you're not here in time, I'm just going to declare the other side the winner. I'll say you're being like Fetterman or something like that, but he should be here in time. But I also want to welcome to the show right up Ron Bouchard, who is the Republican candidate for Arapahoe County Coroner. And then Casper, if you want to go ahead and turn your camera and microphone on, you can join us too. Casper is helping Ron with the campaign, and also get a little bit of information from Casper about the Heidi Ganahl campaign too, because I know he's doing a lot of work for them. So first off, Ron, welcome. Thank you for your time. And how are things going? I mean, the coroner's race, not typically one that gets a lot of attention, but it's still important, and it's important to have Republicans in there. So how are things going?
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's going great. It's been an interesting journey. I'm a research biologist, throwing my hat in, you know, to be a candidate for coroner. And yes, it's kind of that office off to the side that a lot of folks don't think about, but don't realize how important it is. And the role the coroner's office plays in investigative work done around unsuspected deaths, and the community outreach programs, which we should support, helping community members who've lost a loved one and families understand what happened, right, and connecting those dots. And so as a research biologist of over 31 years, my expertise is microscopy. Everyone's kind of a tongue twister, people. So that's the use of microscopes. I'm on over 41 peer-reviewed scientific journals and publications surrounding cell death, cell toxicity, diseases that typically revolve around cell stress, oxidative stress. We hear a lot about, you know, oxidative stress in our body. These a lot of times can lead to terrible diseases that can end in death. And we're also going to be addressing the fentanyl poisoning crisis that's hitting our community.
And I think one of the ways that people may say, well, you know, it's a coroner's office, it's, you know, not political. And I would say, let's just take a look at all the coroners who were complicit in declaring, you know, motorcycle accidents, gunshot wounds, COVID deaths, right? I mean, I'm assuming that would be the kind of nonsense that and the complete, you know, disreputable, unethical use of the coroner's office. I'm assuming that's the kind of thing you would put a stop to and never be part of, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the other day, and every single day is a learning experience for me. And I don't know that this is what I heard. I don't know the truth of it. There was a young lady out in the audience, and she asked of me the question. It was both my opponent and I were on a panel, and she asked me, and I'm paraphrasing this now. She said, am I going to treat every death equal regard and death investigation equal? Because right now there's a disparity for minorities. And it just took me completely off guard that would even be my mantra. Is I represent the living, but I will speak for the dead.
Right.
And that's what I bring to the table. We're going to bring closure to whoever it is who's lost a family member or loved one.
Well, and hopefully, as Sandra is pointing out, the coroner's office played a significant role and continues to play a role in the Elijah McClain death, right? The young man who died with the paramedics and the coroner's office, they have differing reports and things like that. So, and I've covered it for a long time. And to anyone who thinks that the politics, doesn't necessarily enter in, it can. And I think we've seen over and over that the Democrats weaponize every office they get involved in, and they use it to suppress and hurt and cancel conservatives, and they use it to promote their own cause. The truth has nothing to do with anything anymore.
Well, what I can say is the Lord didn't make me with any of those gears, so I don't have that sort of mindset. I am a passionate, caring person, and I care about helping others. And what really brought me to the table on this, and the Lord did put me to this, was when my parents passed away in Texas last year. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know any resources.
Right.
And the folks that helped me were the coroner's office and a funeral home director. And I realized, oh my, if you don't have this support group, you don't know where to turn.
Right.
And one of the key roles we're going to play, the coroner's office is going to play, and I may end up having to hire a separate staff member to do this. I don't know what the staffing situation is we're going to have an outreach program. And mm-hmm. so family members who's lost a loved one, 2 months down the road, they're going to get a follow-up call. We're going to ask questions. Hey, how are you doing? Do you need help? Are you grieving?
Yeah.
So we're going to ask, and so that's going to be something that I'm going to have a staff member. That's going to be a key role we're going to play. And we're also going to open. So on my webpage, I talk about opening up business opportunities. What I mean by that is it's vast. The industries around the death and dying.
Yeah.
Segment of our reality, which again most right. people don't think about: funeral homes, nursing homes, synagogues. We're going to be working with all these folks. What is your phone numbers? What's your zip code? So we know if so and so passes away in Aurora or Byers or somewhere else, that we're going to try to help figure out who some of the community service members are to help them.
Right.
My role will be working with the forensic pathologist, concurring with their results or not.
Right.
Signing off of death certificates or not, and or investigating unexplained deaths that are just frankly they shouldn't have happened. You know, Susie, right. 28, just died.
Okay.
We're going to be investigating.
Exactly. All right. Exactly. Deep dive. But the opposite, it's like, oh yeah, it was just myocarditis. Who knew? Hey, Casper, let me bring you up because I know you're pointing out something in the chat section. So the current coroner, Dr. Kelly Lear, it has a little bit of a, well, why don't you explain it?
So she appears to be double dipping big time. And, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of it. We're trying to get more information, but it appears that she has a private LLC that does autopsies. So the way this scheme works is that if you have a death in your family and the county or the state is not interested in doing an autopsy, you can request an autopsy, but the state and the county is not going to pay for it. So her private company steps up and says, oh, don't worry.
We'll just pay for it.
No.
Do it and you pay for it.
Exactly. So you as a citizen pay her company. Now, that in itself is not that big of a deal. However, her company does the autopsy in our facilities, in the county facilities, during county time, using staff from the county to help her during the autopsy. So the staff gets paid their regular pay that they make in their right. job, plus they get a little kickback from Kelly. By helping her with this autopsy. And all this is done in our facilities on our dime. That to me is a huge problem.
Well, it seems, I know that in a lot of counties, a lot of times the funeral home, places like that end up being the coroner, which I think is a certain amount of conflict of interest. But it also seems to me this could be too. It seems to me that this would be an incentive for the county coroner to say, oh, we aren't going to do an autopsy, even if the family wants one, and say, so we won't do it. But oh, lo and behold, we have this guy, I can do it for you now through my private company. So that does seem... it seems to me like it'd be a conflict of interest.
Well, and there's no other options. In other words, yeah. She doesn't say, hey, there's A, B, and C, I can do it, or, you know, B can do it, or C can do it. It's just, no, it's a closed loop. She does it and her company makes money from it on our dime.
Well, and I think, and Ron, to go back to the point you made, we're hearing more and more now about some of these unexplained deaths, particularly young people. What is in Florida, people who had the vaccine between 18 and like an 84% increase in unexplained deaths and sudden deaths. I mean, that's like a lot. And there doesn't seem to be anybody except for people like us and Alex Berenson, former New York Times reporter, who are trying to get to the bottom of things like this. And is that the kind of thing you're talking about as a coroner when you have somebody brought in and, you know, and there doesn't appear to be, they just drop dead rather than saying, oh, well, too bad, so sad. You know, that's like, well, let's see, even if the political chips fall over the vaccine.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. And it's true. It's slowly coming out, but it is coming out. And there's Dr. James Thorpe, and he's a OBGYN in Florida. He handles extremely high-risk pregnancies. A lot of folks are coming to him as whistleblowers saying, we're finding this, it's not being reported. And there's also evidence now, and it's all finally coming out, that the spike protein is passing the blood-brain barrier. And also ovaries, testicles, and heart, sinusoidal node in the heart, so the pacemaker cells. So what I intend to do is to utilize an advanced test It's technology called a molecular autopsy, which all these tissue samples, spinal cord, brain, heart tissue samples are sent out. And we literally get back a genetic fingerprint of everything that was in those cells at the time of death. And it's super important that it's done pre-embalming. And so there's a 60-day response time. So I die, you and Casper, my mom and dad, that has to get back to you all within a 60-day time frame. It's a regulated time frame. So these tests are going to get sent out. We're going to have a rapid turnaround in this, and start lining some more dots up. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I had spike protein not only in my spinal fluid, I had it in my bone marrow and in my heart.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're leaning a lot more toward what's going on, and it's so accurate it can say Wuhan spike protein, Johnson Johnson spike protein, Moderna spike protein. It's a fingerprint.
Right. Well, and I think that's going to become increasingly important as we're seeing this go on. I mean, from looking at things coming out of states and in the United and other countries, it seems to me have been more willing to be honest or do some honest research about it. Here in the United States, it's not. And again, not that that would be, let's clarify for folks, sort of the main thrust of what you would do as coroner, but that's why it's important. If you're sitting there thinking, well, who cares if it's a Republican or a Democrat? These are the kind of things that matter, I think.
And then further on that, no one's name is going to be on this. All of these tests that are run, the data is going to be available for the medical and the research community to investigate and research. Potentially any one of us right here might have a problem. The virus itself is causing illness. So we're going to try to help get data out to the public, to the research community, medical community, that they can say, hey, you know, we can treat this by this or this. Not just, oh, John Smith passed away from this. We don't know. We need to start pioneering and moving forward on treatment options for people so we can all still live healthy, happy lives.
Well, you know, that's a really good point, because you do right now, you have periodically the insurance industry kind of raises the point that there are a whole lot of deaths that are not caused by COVID, a rise in deaths, right? And way more than what
caused death.
Yeah, exactly. But something's causing it. And yep. I mean, you know, and if you can figure out what it is, that's a great point. You can also then figure out, well, maybe how do you address it before death? But if you've got a scientific community, you know, that's just been blindfolded by politics and they don't want to say anything bad about the vaccine, not only is there no interest in getting into the truth of the deaths, but there's no interest in saving people who might possibly be saved. So that's a great point.
Correct. And again, it's coming out, these white, almost cooked egg white-like structures being found in deceased individuals who can't even be embalmed. As a research scientist, we're going to start having those samples analyzed. And it's appearing that it's amyloid protein, which is basically just a generic term. It's a protein that your body can't properly process and digest out of your bloodstream.
Ah.
So what's causing this and what symptoms did we find in those people when they passed away?
That's important. Well, Casper, let me ask you then too, because I know you're helping Ron. You're also helping Heidi Ganahl. You know, Colorado, I think there are a lot of people who are not predicting, I'd be one of them, a massive red wave in Colorado. But out there on the ground, what are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of great things. My only fear is that we're running out of runway. You know, we're coming to the end of the cycle, and a lot of good things haven't happened earlier in the process. They're happening now. You know, Heidi and Danny have launched the SPARK plan, the community SPARK plan that I brought to them. Is the SPARK stands for System, Plan, Access, Resources, and Knowledge. And that plan is launched. We're making great strides in the community, but again, you know, we're coming to the end of the cycle, so what, you know, it's like all hands on deck. We got to get this information out there. I'm sure you're going to talk about the debate that happened last night. She did a great job again holding him accountable. At one point, I thought she was going to spank him and send him to his room.
I wondered one of the articles I read said it got chippy. Well, I take it that Polis kind of woke up after the last time, right? I mean, Heidi Ganahl, and God bless her for doing this, isn't one of those, I'll reach across the aisle and Jared Polis, he's actually a really nice guy. She's like, no, it's your fault that people are dying. He's taking it to him. She is.
She called him a spoiled brat. No, this is all your fault, you know, she got him to actually wear a tie and suit this time for the debate. You know, before he was in the sneakers and wearing this little pullover, whatever. So now he decided to dress up because she was
look professional.
Yeah. And then, you know, I found something very odd. He kept saying, if you elect me as governor, I'm like, dude, he should be saying, look, I'm the governor. I want to continue to be the governor. He's like, if you elect me as governor, I'm like, well, aren't you the current governor now?
What have you been doing the past several years that you haven't? Yeah. And I think she counter making at the point, hey, you're the governor. If you haven't done it before, maybe it was Christy Burton Brown and one of her tweets was doing that. So, Casper, before we let you go, I want to ask one more Heidi Ganahl question. But Ron, just for you, sort of two final questions. One, what are you hearing on the ground? Because, I mean, I'm sure you're out there knocking on doors, talking to people. What are you hearing from folks?
Well, yeah, knocking doors, not so much as meeting face-to-face and handing my cards to folks.
Okay.
I have handed out 3,000 cards face-to-face, 99.99%. It's complete strangers. I don't know who they are. I just walk up to people everywhere I go. They're engaged. They want to hear what's going on. They're concerned. I bring light to the office itself, the importance. I had one lady who just said, you know, no, you know, not to be rude. I said, but don't you just handle dead people? And, you know, it's so important that the death certificates are properly documented for insurance payment purposes, closure in the family. I've had five people whose loved ones passed through our coroner's office who have solicited me when I get elected to please help them. They're not getting any response from our current coroner's office. One person in particular believes that his son-in-law murdered his daughter and they won't investigate it.
Wow.
So, you know, and it's just so interesting because people want to understand, you know, why is it this way and why don't we hear more?
Right.
We're going to hear about this office. It's going to be front and foremost. The coroner's office is going to be a sounding board that everyone's going to know who Ron Bouchard is. Everyone's going to know, hey, this guy out in Arapahoe County, you should hear what he's got to say. He's reporting things and he's helping community. That's what I'm bringing to the table.
All right. Where can people help you and find out more about you?
So my webpage is Ron4. So Ron4, Colorado. And then there's information on there about some of my publications and a little bit about me. There's a donate button. If we really could use help. We need, it's just unreal the amount of money required for everything involved with the campaigning and prayers. A lot of times, I'm not in your county. I said, well, just keep my card, put it on your dresser drawer and just where you can sort of see the corner and say a prayer. We need prayer. it's unbelievable. The attacks we're under right now. And what I, again, what I want to bring to the table is passion, compassion, and that this office is an office you go to get help and answers.
All right. That's perfect. Well, and Casper, then let me have you answer me this, a final question for you in terms of Heidi. I know the polls do indicate, and, you know, polls anymore, though, I have to wonder what's even going on with the polling industry, because I think if you're a Trump supporter or a Republican, a conservative, I mean, you know, you don't want to be raided by the FBI. So you don't even talk about that. What is the sense in the campaign about how things are going?
So the campaign is jazzed, and Heidi has really energized the team because of her debate, outcomes. You know, I mean, she's done a phenomenal job. I tweeted her last night. I said, you did a great job. And then I listened to the debate again. I said, scratch that. I underrated your job. You killed it. You knocked it out of the park, you know. So she does this again. And I think I haven't seen any polls come out since these debates started. So I want to see some polls coming out after the debate to see how people feel. So hopefully those polls will start to reflect what's really going on. Well, and I think she has a puncher's chance, really.
I think I noticed that poll has recently put in way more money, too. I mean, it's clear. I'll give him this, at least financially. He doesn't seem to be taking this for granted. And I got to assume that there is a reason for that he might have some internal polling. And I love the way you put that, Casper, because I think you're right. You're not rosy eyed. Sometimes, you know, and I get that sometimes if you're a party official, you have to say and do certain things. But to say she's got, but that's not mislead people in a puncher's chance. And I guess I would say that means votes matter in this election, right? Every vote matters.
Yeah, every vote matters. And for people that, you know, want to stray off the path right now, now is not the time. If you want to complain about Heidi, complain after the election. But right now, everybody needs to vote for Heidi. You know, I was an early Greg Lopez supporter. Everybody knows that. I endorsed Greg early on. But once he conceded, lost and stuff, I said, okay, well, it's over.
You know,
now,
I was going to say, she convinced me. And I have to say, Chuck's not here, but I think she has convinced Chuck too. He said, you know, I mean, her telling Channel 9, I'm not going to debate on your biased network.
Right.
I mean, she's not afraid and she's not mealy mouthed and she says what you think. And you just get the sense she'll do what she says she's going to do. And I know if you can win over Chuck, you know.
And I've known Heidi for 10 years. So I've already had a healthy respect for her, but it has grown 10 times now, working directly with her on the campaign, her being open to new ideas, you know, like reaching into the Black community. That is huge. No other Republican, to my knowledge, in the past 10 years has done what her and Danny are doing right now. She's been going into Black churches. So has Danny. Danny met with the president of the NAACP in Aurora. I mean, you know, they're going into the lion's den and they're not hesitating on talking to anyone at any time. So I'm excited about that.
All right. Perfect. All right. Well, Casper and Ron, thank you both for your time. Good luck. Feel free. Give us a holler. Reach out to us anytime, particularly as we get closer. We're happy to help and keep getting the word out. And thank you guys for all the hard work that you do.
Thank you so much. And God bless.
All right. Thank you. You too. And then I think Casper had put on the sign. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Casper. If you want to watch the debate, go to Heidi's website, and that's Heidi for governor.com. You can go to the website there and it's all there. We got a ton of comments here. Let's see what we get. That's Sandra. That's where you can watch the debate. This is also from Sandra. I was like you, Casper. Thank you. Agree with you. And for me, it's time for Neuschwanger to back Heidi also. I would agree with that. We don't need anybody. Heidi Ganahl needs all the help that she can get. And to Jacob, if Republicans take the House, why not keep the January 6th committee going with new members and let Trump testify? At least the committee in the country will hear the other side. Okay, so what he's talking about, we'll talk about this briefly until Chuck gets here. Then they're going to bring on Peg Cage and Paul Arner for the great debate. So the January 6th, Chuck is here. The January 6th committee, I mean, it's ridiculousness. They showed the video videotape, the dramatic videotape of Nancy Pelosi on her cell phone. But when she's holding her cell phone, okay, like if her cell phone is on, right, you can see pictures on it, right? Nancy Pelosi, look at that picture. Her cell phone is black. She's not even talking to anyone. And it's like this, there's this insurrection going on and she's got the camera in her face. That whole thing, the whole thing was staged and planned. And she had her documentary crew there. It's a charade. You know, they subpoenaed Trump, which they can't subpoena Trump. They just did that in, you know, I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to have Trump testify, but he better not. And I think the Republicans are going to take the House, so it's going to be moot anyway. So, hello, Chuck.
Hello, everybody.
Back in time for the debate. I was saying, if you were not here, I was going to declare them the winners.
Oh, no.
I've said you were doing a John Fetterman.
That's right.
Okay, so Chuck is here. Everyone do the wave stadium style. Mm-hmm. There we go. Yeah, from Jacob. Why did Pelosi have a filming crew there? Exactly, Jacob, who just coincidentally happened. She couldn't have the National Guard there. She couldn't have more law enforcement presence, but she did manage on this extremely dangerous day where AOC was actually not cowering under a desk. You know, she had a film crew with her there to capture her every concern move. So what a bunch of garbage there. Okay. So if you listen to the show Wednesday, and if we've got Peg and Paul on, if you guys want to go ahead and bring your cameras up and unmute yourself, because you're going to need to, because Chuck's definitely unmuted. And there's Peg Cage. Hey, Peg. On Friday, we were talking about, should you vote in person on Election Day?
Yeah, which, with Anna Ferguson and Marla Brown.
Anna said, and I know Joanne Winholtz, the chair of the Adams County Republican Party, has suggested that too.
Yes.
And then Chuck said, no, 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 you're playing into the Democrats' hand, and you should mail your ballot in.
Why don't we have the debate, not have you describe
it? Well, I was just saying to people how it started out, and it got a little tense, and we said, okay, we'll go.
A friendly vote.
But we're running out of time, I guess. And I was poor Chuck. I'm like, Anna comes on. I'm like, do not attack Anna.
Not she attacking. Can't. Having a robust discussion is not attacking.
S. Dick Wadhams and Craig Silverman. But anyway, so we'll do it now. So how do you want? I'll be the moderator.
Oh, no.
And do you want to start or?
No, I think, you know, I think.
Oh, I'll start. I'll start.
Chuck. Okay.
Chuck, you're wrong.
I've heard that before.
Why? So Peg, talk to us. Why do you think it is? When do you think people should vote and why? Let me put it that way.
Yes. And Sandra says, don't mail it. We're not even going to talk about using the mail anymore. The mail, the post office is corrupt. No, just don't even use the mail. What we need to do is get back to honest elections. We won't get back to honest elections until we get rid of the mail ballots. And so let me bring Paul on. Where
I think
you,
he's
Paul?
Not, you know what, Thomas says he doesn't see him here in the waiting room,
okay.
So he's going to go ahead and give him a phone call.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Thanks. Okay, so anyway, the only thing that we can do at this point is take the responsibility wherever we can. We will have a ballot on our hand, and we won't be able to... that ballot that's in our hand is a tool of the deep state. Okay. They have taken over our ballots. They have taken over our elections. We have absolutely no control unless we go in and we vote in person. And the problem with going in and voting in person on paper early is that they can do exactly what you're saying, Chuck, only they're organized, as you pointed out on Wednesday. We are not organized, and we don't have anybody set up to look through the polls and see who has voted and who has not and get out the vote, which is why we used to like early voting, is because we had more time to get out the vote. Now, the polls are so bad that we don't even know who's a real person on the rolls. So it would just be worthless for us to get out. If the opposition is on notice that we are telling everybody to wait until the last day, and we are telling the people to keep their ballots and use it as proof that somebody else has stolen their identity if the vote has come in early, they'll be a little less likely to do that. And my friend Linda has been putting in the chat Colorado Counts.
Right.
And you can get ColoradoCounts.com has a lovely little cartoon, easy to get to thing. It's also pinned on mycoloradogop.org. So you could use that. And
Paul, I think, is here too. Paul. All right. We see Paul too there. Paul Arner. Paul, you know, I'm not sure. Real quick, you want to tell folks a little bit about yourself real quick, and then you can you jump in at a little late. Peg has kind of given your guys a side, and we haven't let Chuck talk yet.
I'm sorry. I just had
no.
I work for a living, and all of us do that.
Oh, those pesky jobs, earning a living. That gets in the way of a good podcast all the time. Well, why?
Right.
So real quick, though, you've been involved in Boulder County Republican politics. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And you're involved in what, the U.S. Election Integrity Project as well?
Yes.
Okay. And why then, Peg kind of did a great job too. And let me get you, and then we'll open up Chuck's side, then we'll get to the debate.
Okay.
Why do you think it is important for people to wait until election day and vote in person?
Okay, because it screws up the algorithm.
Okay.
That if they're taking, so the people that run the elections, we have machines that have been provably shown to be accessible from the internet, they're hackable, and it's also you could have something that just listens,
right?
And so since they start processing ballots. The day that we start picking them up, I think, is like next week, right? And it goes for a period of nearly a month that we're picking up ballots. I actually happen to be working also on for just a couple of days this year as a courier judge.
Okay.
So I'm familiar with that whole process. But anyway, they take the ballots in, and now we have a thermometer that they can stick in that basically tells us what the range is, who's ahead, who's behind, how far behind one side is than the other, for all the different, because, you know, you have a database that you're filling in with all this data. So I assume you guys are familiar with the 2000 mules, right?
Right.
Okay, so what makes sense? So you have NGOs that are filling out ballots, but how do they know how many ballots to fill out? Well, you know that because you're taking a temperature reading every day after people have read in all of the ballots for the day. And now we know how many we need.
And let me clarify on one thing, because it's my understanding. I just want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. And Chuck, don't worry. Chuck is doing a great job being patient. They don't actually tabulate the votes.
Can we run out of time?
Yeah, there we go. They don't actually tabulate the votes on a daily basis. But what the Democrats have is money to figure out who's voting. And so they're basing that. They're like, okay, well, this person has voted Democrat, or this person came in a batch of NGO ballots, so we know that they filled it out Democrat. So that's how they tell. They don't tabulate it. They're doing it based on. But that takes a lot of money.
I don't know that they have them tabulated. I know that they
tabulate
process
on the day of election. They start the day of the election, putting them in the machines.
Yeah, they don't start. They don't push the tabulate button, is my understanding, till 7 o'clock.
So you're saying they don't separate the ballots the days before? That's
yeah,
not
they separate
true.
And they put them in the machine, but they don't officially.
They don't add up.
They don't officially, but I don't believe that they're not filling things in.
They're scanned, I believe. Yeah, they're scanned as they come in.
Okay. All right. Well, now let's let Chuck say. So that's your guys' side.
So the basic idea is, if you wait until the last day, then you have a situation where you can provide a whole bunch. Maybe more than they expect. They don't know who's going to vote until they need this. And so you want to choose people that, I mean, if you're going to come start making up addresses and people to provide on the other side faux ballots,
that's
then you have to have a count to decide how many you need.
Okay.
And that doesn't happen unless you, well, if if you wait until the last day, then they don't have the time to collect these.
It messes up. Okay, Chuck, your turn.
You know, I played basketball in high school, and I was a pretty high scorer, but they didn't have the three-point rule. They now have the three-point rule, and I can imagine coaching my team go, that three-point rule is bogus. It's no good. You guys may not shoot three-point shots. You may not. You know, you must stay within the two-point range, but that's real basketball. We'd lose every day. We'd lose every game. That's an analogy I gave to Peg. If we said, okay, we're having a knife fight, but the other side decides to bring guns, you're going to die right. If you don't bring guns, because bringing a knife to a gunfight is not a good idea. And
I would agree with you,
Bill. And that's what this is. Also, they don't ballot harvest, and I want to include that into the calculation. I mean, John Caldera, who's become a
Republicans, are they you're talking?
Yes.
Law says that people can bring up to 10 ballots. During an election. Without having any investigation in Colorado. Now that's a Colorado law.
They bring in hundreds. They don't care.
Yeah.
And they will not be prosecuted.
And so you're not ballot harvesting. Well, okay. But okay.
Well, that is ballot harvesting.
Now, what Chuck is saying is John Caldera had a column in which he was right, and he was saying Republicans don't ballot harvest, and the law they should. He was pointing out the Democrats do, and the Republicans.
Assuming they don't cheat,
we should cheat because they cheat. Is that what you're saying?
No. Forget the cheating. They cheat anyway, but it's not the cheating. They ballot harvest. Let's say they obey the rule and just do 10.
How do you know when you're ballot harvesting? How do you know that the chain of custody? How do you know that they aren't cheating? How do you know they're not just
telling you they may cheat. They may totally cheat, but we don't collect any. I mean, it's not a matter of our cheating. So let me finish. I was kind of calm. So we don't do that, which is a huge disadvantage. We're so disorganized that we do not know who's voted and not voted. It used to be, I know Peg was a poll watcher. I was a poll watcher in the old days. You'd be checking off all the names. You hopefully had people go out and say, Bob hasn't voted, go get Bob, and so forth. They do that now, but they have a month to do it. All your people are sending their ballots early, they know everyone who hasn't voted, all of their side. You wait to the last day. You can't poll because everybody's coming in the same day. So you've given up an enormous amount of voting, an enormous amount. So what happens, and then two, if all the Republicans or a majority of the Republicans go in and vote in person, that means that the outstanding mail-in ballots come from a majority of Democrats. And therefore what they do is they say, I don't care how bad this ballot looks. We as election judges say it's good because it's more likely than not to be a Democrat. And that's what they did when they cheated in Milwaukee and other places. They'd have the state government go out and get the vote, right? They'd have every effort for the state. They didn't care if you're Republican or Democrat because it was 90% Democrat. So for 9 out of every 10 ballots they raised, they were going to be Democrats. So you're Republican? Sure. You put your one in, 9 more Democrats, 1 Republican. So you've given them the election. You've given them the election. And three, I vote every year. And I like to vote on election day. It's kind of get used to it and stuff. But there are years. I remember one time I had to go to a hospital on election day. I remember the time I had to go out of town suddenly because of trial and the judge wanted to see us. You delay everybody until election day, you're going to have less percentage voting. And the idea, I know this is a shock, the idea is get more of your votes in, not less of your votes in. And that's why Republicans just sit there and get pounded and pounded and pounded. And there's a reason why we've lost every election since mail ballot harvesting started.
Yeah.
Every statewide election, it's not that the demographics.
So Arizona, the primary was won. We'll see what happens in the fall, but that was won by two things. It was preventing people from ballot harvesting by having having tailgate parties at all of the drop boxes so that they could take pictures of people who were dropping off more than their desired amount, and also by voting in the last day. Now, why do you explain that?
Oh, sure, because one, Arizona is much closer to being a Republican state than Colorado is. Two, ballot harvesting is legal in Colorado. You can ballot harvest 10 or more ones, and quite
frankly.
But
if you take pictures, then you can compare notes and say, this person
what does it matter
if they don't cheat,
they can still have every person in the world delivering 10 at a time. They've got enough workers. They didn't win because they didn't ballot harvest. They won because they couldn't ballot harvest. It was illegal. And two, it's a much closer one.
Let me though. I want to ask a question.
No, this is because
both you guys are talking about things. On the one hand, Chuck, you're saying we need
you're
to.
Supposed to moderate. Dominate.
Okay, so here's the question then. So you're assuming what you're saying is you want to mail in early because then the candidates can figure out have their voters voted.
Assuming we have that much organization. But if you don't, if you tell everybody to vote on election day, then that. Even if you did that effort, it'd be worthless.
Well, that's my question to you. What if, though, the candidates say, hey, we don't have that ability? I mean, because I don't
know. Well, get the ability or don't run. Well. If you're trying to lose, then try to lose.
Hey, there's some really cool chat comments.
Let's see. First of all, Jacob is worried about if you wait till the last minute and go in and vote. If you're in line at 7 o'clock, Jacob, just so you know, they have to let you vote. And I've seen long lines. Yeah. It's hours. Yeah. So don't worry about that. Leo said you can prevent ballot harvesting by not watering the ballots all summer. Thank you, Leo. And then from Sandra, but Linda, do we know that they will count the paper ballot? How do we watch them? How do we make sure that our vote is counted? They only stuff the ballot boxes. This is from Linda, because they knew we would call for an audit. They were backfilling all of the stolen votes. And then Sandra says, Leo, thanks. I needed that. I'll tell you what, just as a moderator, I see both sides.
No, you always see both sides.
I always see both sides.
That's your comment on everything. There is only one logical, real winning side.
No.
That's right. Yes. It's my side.
It's Peg's side, Peg and Paul's side. Well, because I hear what you're saying, because it messes up the algorithm. So they don't.
Yeah, they don't have to have an algorithm.
But that would be, that's my,
and they can put an algorithm in earlier. Just say, okay, 55%. We need 55% of the algorithm.
So I asked you what happens if the candidates, because your argument loses some of its persuasiveness if nobody has the ability to do the ballot harvesting.
Then don't run.
Then my question, my question to Paul is, what though? How do you know? I mean, we wonder if they've had the ability, like I said, can they take that into account? So they're like, okay, well, then maybe we figured this percentage of Republicans. So we're just going to make sure. And in other words,
so we have enough. We have enough fake ballots that we can refer to all the time that it doesn't matter what we do, that we're always going to lose. And that's why, Judicial Watch has discovered that pretty much every county in Colorado has more than 100% of the registered voters exceeds the population.
Right.
And so they don't do cleaning of the rolls.
Right.
Which is yet another place where the problems happen. And yes, it may be that they have so many people, they have so many bogus addresses and names, it doesn't really matter. And at that point, Colorado is a captured state.
We are a captured state. And the one thing that John Caldera does, Phil Anschutz gave him $15 million for ballot issues, not putting a 0.1% income tax, but get rid of ballot harvesting, a huge public campaign on why it destroys our democracy. That's worth having because we could win absent ballot harvesting. We won in 2014 and 2016 before they began the ballot harvesting. 2018, the demographics didn't all change. What changed is they had a huge ballot harvesting operation.
Well, and so you're saying, we all know that, but what you're saying, Chuck, is the way you go around the ballot harvesting is get your ballot in early so we can ballot harvest. You're saying we don't do that. We're not set up to do that. So the way you get around their ballot harvesting is to screw up their algorithm by going on.
That's not ballot harvesting. Right. Well, that's vote rigging.
So what the, I think our basic conundrum is we've got a bunch of lazy people who aren't as interested in getting out and voting. And Chuck is saying that we can motivate them if we know who they are and we can call them at the last minute.
Not
the
last minute, all month long. You got a month. Well, say, Bob, get your ballot in as soon as possible. Hey, it's Thursday. You haven't got it in. Hey, it's Friday. You haven't got it. I know. Get it in. That's what you do. And, so, and you need,
wait,
you
let Peg finish. She's making a
point. Me finish one thing. The amount of people you need for poll day, if you just on election day, is enormous to, mm-hmm. to be able to poll get out. If you have, you know, close to 30 days, you know, it's a lot easier if you ballot harvest, a lot easier, and a lot easier to get people saying, I'm coming over right now to pick up your ballot.
You know, that's another thing, Chuck, that I am just so amazed that the people of Colorado are so tolerant of these long seasons because it cost us so much. We dropped the first effort at a presidential primary because it cost so much. It was like $2 million in 2008. And we said, you know, people aren't using it. Well, they aren't using it now, but we had 12 weeks at least of just ballot manipulation activity last year. And that doesn't leave any time for the candidates to work. So the idea is, as we talked this morning, we cannot win until we get rid of the mail ballots and all the machines and all the manipulation, but we can't change that unless we get people elected, which we aren't going to do until we get rid of this stuff. So it's up to
it's
us.
Sort of, you know, what St. Francis say, do what you can at first and then what's possible, and then you can do the impossible. Let's first start winning some campaigns. And get rid
We should do all of it, Chuck.
No, you can't do everything. St. Francis did not say do the impossible, do the possible, and do what you can. He said start out with what you can, and what you can do, and I think it'd be a successful campaign, although you'd have to put a lot of money in, and Phil's got
China
a lot of money.
Is taking over the country. And we're not going to have any more choices.
We love China, right? What we have to do is get rid of ballot harvesting. We do that, we can win a mail ballot elections as long as there's not ballot harvesting.
I think that would be.
And then once we got rid of ballot harvesting, then get rid of mail-in ballots.
No, we need to get rid of machines.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because the machine can run algorithms that actually change the count by multiplying by factors.
Well,
because
also,
they record everything as rational numbers and not as integers, although nothing else, integers is all that's necessary, but they report everything as 8.63 that they can multiply by a factor. And now if the vote comes in for this person, then we multiply it by a factor of, and as long as the sum of the factors adds to one, the number of ballots doesn't change. But the votes do.
I see.
And that one you can't prove unless you actually go in and count the votes.
We can't do that in Colorado. Jenna Griswold says we can't do that.
Well, Tina Peters found out.
Yeah, Tina Peters found out the hard way. Yeah, you can't do
that. Because they ran the same algorithm to count that they used to count the first time. So you can't even verify that the counting was cheating. Because they ran the same algorithm.
Well, I mean, there's so many issues. And on this one, it's a tricky one. I admit, let me just finish. And listening to both of you, I go back and forth.
No, you don't.
I will say one thing in support of Chuck, though. And this isn't cheating. This is something that's legal that the Democrats do that we do not do. And I think I talked about this last cycle. So my daughter's a registered Democrat. And in the 2020 election, right? When Trump won.
2016.
Okay. Okay, yeah, 2016. I'm sorry. Well, maybe it was a 2020. I forget.
2014.
Anyway, we had Democrats because she was traveling, right? So she hadn't voted. There were Democrats, I would say 3 or 4 times, knocked on our door looking for her. And Halloween, they came dressed as little trick-or-treaters, right? And they were like, is Jennifer here? I'm like, what? And they're like, oh, we're with, and it has nothing. They're like,
working-class family.
Yeah, we're with working-class families who like puppies and unicorns, you know, and we noticed Jennifer hasn't voted. She got letters from companies saying, oh, we're just doing a survey about why you haven't voted. And
well, John Caldera pointed out, and that's a good point. They send letters with official looking letterhead.
That's what Jenny got.
Saying, you know, you have not voted.
You're the only one in your neighborhood.
Your block
that hasn't
voted. You have an ethical and moral obligation to vote. I mean, it's incredible.
And so there is some advantage to knowing all along. The question, though, is Peg, what you raised is, yeah, but do we have our candidates that do that? And in the
answer is no, we don't have our candidates to do that. But even if they could get their mother to vote. Hey, Mom, you haven't voted. Could you please vote for me?
Voting same day. You don't have to provide.
So we need to do a lot of things. We need to do what we can, where we're at. Each one of us can make sure that we're calling our neighbors. And I suggest we call them and tell them vote on election day, last possible minute, in person. Get a brand new printed ballot. Vote in person on election day at the polling center. And then
go to the concession party right afterwards.
Wait, Peg gets, okay, so that's Peg. Chuck, you real quick, we're out of time here.
You're going to lose. I mean, you wait till the last moment. Things don't get done at the last moment. I know. I'm love waiting to do things at the last moment, and sometimes they don't get done.
That's right. And there's one more thing that we can do, and that is to encourage every county clerk and every canvas board member to not certify the election.
I agree.
As we're talking about, there's so much BS going on in these elections. They are uncertifiable. They have not been certifiable since at least 2012. Do not certify the election and make the Secretary of State use her brand new SB 153 to challenge it and bring it on.
And then we'll find out how much that SB 153 was actually constitutional.
That's exactly.
Why worry about that if you're a Democrat? Constitutional fluid.
Yeah, it's just a piece of paper.
Right.
All right. Hey, Peg and Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming on. I don't think we settled anything, but that's America, right?
That's America. So, yeah.
We love you guys. Thank you to everybody on Zoom. Thank you to Ron and Casper earlier. Happy Party Friday, everybody. We will see you on Monday. Where on Monday? We're going to be talking about Jenna Griswold's 30,000 postcards to non-citizens.
Accidental postcards that we paid for.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Twice.
Yes, exactly. And thank you, anyway, guys.
Accidentally twice. Yes.
Accidentally twice. That's how I do
things. Thank you, guys. Love you.
All right. Bye, guys. We'll see you Monday.
Have a good day.